means getting you safe and striking against him is a better bet.
But she's right, said Kit. Malcolm promised all sorts of things to my dad, including keeping him safe. In the end, it turned out he'd made sure that if anything happened to him, my father would die too. Katerina,
Diana turned aside, the phone pressed to her ear. I need a favor, a big one.
We'll all be seen as cowards, said Drew, unhappily, running away like this.
You are children, said Arthur. No one would expect you to stand and fight.
He went across the room to the window. No one moved to join him. The sounds coming from outside were enough. Tavi had his face pressed against his sister's shoulder.
To London, said Diana. That's fine. Thanks, Katerina. She hung up the phone. London, said Livy. Why London? Why don't we go to Idris, said Drew, where Emma and Jules are?
Katerina can't open a portal to Idris, said Diana, not meeting Drew's gaze. But she has an arrangement with a London institute.
Then we should contact the Clave, said Drew.
She jumped back as the air in front of her began to shimmer.
We need to get our things, said Tavi, looking at the growing shimmer with worry.
It was spreading, a sort of pinwheel now of whirling colors and moving air.
We can't go with nothing.
We don't have time for that, said Diana. We don't have time to contact the Clave. And there are Blackthorn houses in London, safe places, people you know.
But why? Livy began. If the Clave...
It's entirely possible the Clave would prefer to trade one of you to Malcolm, said Arthur. Isn't that what you mean, Diana?
Diana said nothing. The whirling pinwheel was resolving into a shape of a door, tall and broad, surrounded by glowing runes.
As would the Centaurians, at least some of them, said Diana. We are running from them as much as anyone else. They are already vanquishing the sea demons. There's little time.
Diego would never, Drew began indignantly.
Diego isn't in charge, said Diana.
The portal had resolved into a steady, wavering door, which was open. Through it, Kit could see a living room of sorts, with faded, flowered wallpaper. It seemed incongruous in the extreme.
Now come, Drusilla, you first.
With a look of despairing anger, Drusilla crossed the room and stepped through the portal, still holding Tavi. Kit watched in stunned amazement as they spun away, vanishing. Livy moved toward the portal next, hand in hand with Ty. She paused in front of it, the force of the magic that pulsed through it, lifting her hair.
But we can't leave this place to Zara and the cohort, she protested, turning toward Diana. We can't let them have it.
Better than any of you dying, Diana said. Now go. But it was Ty who hesitated.
Kit's coming, right?
Diana looked at Kit. He felt his throat hurt. He didn't know why.
I'm coming, he said.
He watched as Livy and Ty stepped into the colorful void, watched as they vanished. Watched as Diana followed, stepped up to the portal himself and paused there looking at Arthur.
Did you want to go first? He said.
Arthur shook his head. There was an odd look on his face, odd even for Arthur. Though Arthur hadn't been that odd tonight, Kit thought. It was as if the emergency had forced him to hold himself together in a way he normally couldn't.
Tell them, he said, and the muscles in his face twitched.
Behind him, the front door shook. Someone was trying to open it.
Tell them.
You'll be able to tell them yourself in a minute, said Kit.
He could feel the force of the portal pulling at him. He even thought he could hear voices through it. Ty's voice, Livy's. Yet he stood where he was.
Is something going on? He said.
Arthur moved toward the portal. For a moment, Kit relaxed, thinking Arthur was going to step into it beside him. Instead, he felt a hand on his shoulder.
Tell Julian, thank you, Arthur said, and shoved hard.
Kit fell into the whirling, soundless nothingness. The fairy prince let fly his arrow. Kieran moved faster than Mark would have thought possible. He swung his body around, covering Mark's. The arrow whistled through the air, singing like a deadly bird. Mark only had time to grab for Kieran to push him away when the arrow struck, burying itself in Kieran's back just below his shoulder blade. He slumped against Mark's shoulder. With his free hand, Mark pulled a dagger from his belt and threw it. The prince fell, screaming, the blade in his thigh. Mark began to drag Kieran from the clearing. The arrows had stopped, but
Fire was blooming from the banners, with their mark of the broken crown. They had caught fire. The gentry fairies were screaming and milling, many breaking free to run. Still, holding Kieran, Mark vanished into the forest.
Emma?
Christina whispered. The clearing was thick with noise, laughter, hoots, and jeers. In the distance, she could see Julian with his knife to Erek's throat. Gasps rose up as he pushed his way through the king's pavilion, though the king, distracted by Emma, had not yet seen. Emma was kneeling on the ground, gripping the arm of the wounded fairy champion. She looked up and saw Christina, and her eyes brightened.
"Help me with my dad," Emma said.
She was tugging at her father's arm, trying to get it looped around her neck. He lay motionless, and for a moment Christina feared he was dead. He pulled away from Emma and lumbered to his feet. He was a slender man, tall, and the family resemblance was clear. He had Emma's features, the shape of her eyes. His were blank, though, their blue dulled to milkiness.
"Let me go," he said. "Bitch Nephilim girl, let me go. This has gone far enough."
Christina's blood froze at his words. The king burst out into another round of laughter. Christina caught at Emma, pulling her toward her.
"Emma, you can't believe everything you see here."
"This is my father," said Emma.
Christina was holding her wrist. She could feel the pulse pounding in Emma's veins. Emma held her free hand out.
"Dad," she said, "please, come with me."
"You are Nephilim,"
said Emma's father. Faintly on his throat, the white scars of old marks were visible.
"If you touch me, I will drag you to the feet of my king, and he will have you killed."
The fairies all around them were giggling, uproarious, clutching at each other, and the thought that it was Emma's horror and confusion that was making them chuckle sent spikes of murderous rage through Christina's veins. It was one thing to study fairies, one thing to read about how their emotions were not like human emotions, how the unseelie court fairies were raised to find pleasure in the pain of others, to wrap you in a net of words and lies and watch smiling while you choked on their tricks. It was another thing to see it. There was a sudden commotion. The unseelie king ran to the opposite edge of the pavilion. He was shouting orders, the knights in sudden disarray.
"Julian,"
Christina thought. And yes, she could see him, Julian holding Erek in front of him at the foot of the king's pavilion. He had deliberately drawn the king away from Emma and Christina.
"It will be easy enough to decide this," Christina said.
She took her Bali song from her belt and held it out to the champion.
"Take this," she said.
"Christina, what are you doing?" Emma said.
"It's cold iron," said Christina.
She took another two steps toward the champion. His face was changing even as she watched, less and less like Emma's, more and more like something else, something grotesque living under the skin.
"He's a shadow hunter. Cold iron shouldn't bother him."
She moved closer, and the champion, who had looked like John Carstairs, changed completely. His face rippled, and his body flexed and changed, his skin growing mottled and gray-green. His lips pushed outward, and his eyes sprang horrifyingly wide and yellow, his hair receding to show a slick, lumpy pate. Where Emma's father had stood was a fairy knight with a squat body and the head of a toad. Emma stared, white-faced. Its wide mouth opened, and it spoke in a croaking voice.
"At last! At last, free to slough the illusion of a disgusting Nephilim."
It didn't finish its sentence. Emma had seized up Cortana and lunged forward, slamming the blade into the knight's throat. It made a wet, squelching sound. Pus-colored blood sprayed from its wide mouth. It staggered back, but Emma followed, twisting the hilt of the knife. The stench of blood and the sound of wetly tearing flesh almost made Christina vomit.
"Emma?"
Christina shouted.
"Emma!"
Emma drew the sword back and stabbed again and again, until Christina grabbed her shoulders and yanked her back. The fairy knight sunk to the ground, dead. Emma was shaking. spattered with foul blood. She swayed on her feet. Come on. Christina grabbed her friend's arm, started to pull her away from the pavilion. Just then the air exploded with a rustling, singing sound. Arrows. They were tipped with fire, lighting the clearing with an eerie, moving glow. Christina automatically ducked, only to hear a loud clang a few inches from her head. Emma had whipped Cortana to the side, and an arrow had struck the blade, crumbling instantly into pieces. Christina picked up her pace. We have to get out of here. A flaming arrow shot by them and struck a banner dangling from the king's pavilion. The banner caught a light in crackling flames. It illuminated the princes, running from the pavilion, dropping off the edges into shadow. The king still stood before his throne, though, staring down into emptiness. Where was Jules? Where had he and Erek gone? As they neared the edge of the clearing, the fairy woman in the bone dress loomed up in front of them. Her eyes were fish green, without pupils, shimmering like oil in the starlight. Christina brought her foot down hard on the fairy woman's. Her screams were drowned in the court's howls as Christina elbowed her aside. She crashed into the pavilion, small bones raining down from her gown like misshapen snow. Emma's hand was in Christina's. Her fingers felt like ice. Christina tightened her grip. Come on, she said, and they plunged back into the trees. Mark didn't go that far. Julian, Emma, and Christina were still in the court. He pulled Kieran behind a thick oak tree and drew him down to sit leaning against it. Are you all right? Are you in pain? Mark demanded. Kieran looked at him with clear exasperation. Before Mark could stop him, he reached back, grasped the arrow, and yanked it out. Blood came with it, a welter that soaked the back of his shirt. Christ, Kieran, what the hell? What foreign gods do you call on now? Kieran demanded. I thought you said I wasn't dying. You weren't. Mark pulled off his linen vest, wadding up the material to press it to Kieran's back. Except now I might kill you for being so stupid. Hunters heal fast, said Kieran with a gasp. Mark, it really is you. His eyes were luminous. I knew you'd come for me. Mark said nothing. He was concentrating on holding the cloth against Kieran's wound, but a sense of anxiety pressed against the inside of his ribcage. He and Kieran had hardly ended things on good terms. Why would Kieran think Mark would come for him when Mark very nearly hadn't? Kier, he said. He moved the vest away. Kieran was right about the healing. The blood had slowed to a sluggish trickle. Mark dropped the blood-wet linen and touched the side of Kieran's face. It was furnace hot. You're burning up. He reached up to sling the elf bolt necklace back around Kieran's throat, but the other boy stopped him. Why do I have your necklace? He said, frowning. It should be yours. I gave it back to you, Mark said. Kieran gave a hoarse laugh. I would remember that. His eyes went wide, then... I don't remember killing Eorlaf, he said. I know that I did. They told me that much. And I believe it. He was a bastard. But I don't remember it. I don't remember anything after I saw you through the window of the Institute, in the kitchen, talking to that girl, Christina. Mark went cold all over. Automatically he slung the elf bolt necklace over his head, feeling it thump against his chest. Kieran didn't remember? That meant he didn't remember betraying Mark, telling the Wild Hunt that Mark had shared fairy secrets with Nephilim. He didn't remember the punishment, the whippings Julian and Emma had borne. He didn't remember that Mark had broken things off between them, given him his necklace back. No wonder he thought Mark would come for him. That girl, Christina, is right here, said a voice above them. Christina had joined them in the shadows. She looked disheveled, though not nearly as much as Emma, who was splattered with fairy blood and bleeding from a long scratch on her cheek. Mark sprang up. What's going on? Are either of you hurt?
I think we're all right, Emma said.
She sounded bewildered and worryingly blank.
Emma killed the king's champion, said Christina, and then closed her mouth.
Mark sensed there was more to it, but he didn't press. Emma blinked, slowly focusing on Mark and Kieran. "Oh, it's you," she said to Kieran, sounding more like her old self. "Weasel face. Committed any acts of monstrous personal betrayal lately?" Kieran looked stunned. People didn't usually talk to unseelie princes that way, and besides, Mark thought, Kieran no longer remembered why Emma might be angry with him or accuse him of betrayal. "You brought her here with you to rescue me?" he said to Mark. "We all came to rescue you." It was Julian, only partly visible behind Erek, who he was shoving ahead of him. Emma exhaled, an audible sound of relief. Julian looked over at her quickly, and they shared a glance. It was what Mark always thought of as the parabatai glance, the quick once-over to make sure the other person was all right, that they were beside you, safe and living. Though now that he knew of Julian's true feelings for Emma, he couldn't help but wonder if there was a layer more to what they shared. Erek's throat was bleeding where the dagger had likely slipped. He was glaring out from beneath black brows, his face contorted into a snarl.
"Blood traitor," he said to Kieran. He spat past the knife. "Kinslayer."
"Irloth was no kin of mine," said Kieran in an exhausted voice.
"He was more your kin than these monsters," said Erek, glaring around at the shadow hunters surrounding him. "Even now, you betray us for them."
"As you betrayed me to the king, our father," said Kieran. He was huddled among the tree roots, looking surprisingly small. But when he tipped his face back to look at Erek, his eyes were hard as gems. "You think I don't know who told the king I killed Irloth? You think I don't know at whose feet I can lay blame for my exile to the hunt?"
"Arrogant," said Erek. "You have always been arrogant, whelp, thinking you belonged in the court with the rest of us. I am the king's favorite, not you. You earn no special place in his heart, or the hearts of the court."
"Yet they liked me better," Kieran said quietly. "Before..." "Enough," said Julian. "The court is on fire. Knights will be coming after us as soon as the chaos dies down. It's madness to stay here and gossip."
"Important court business is not gossip," snarled Erek.
"It is to me," Julian peered through the woods. "There must be a quick way out of here, towards Sealy Lands. Can you lead us?" Erek was silent. "He can," said Kieran, rising unsteadily to his feet. "He can't lie and say it's not possible. That's why he's not talking." Emma raised an eyebrow at Kieran.
"Weasel face, you're surprisingly helpful when you want to be."
"I wish you would not be so familiar," Kieran said disapprovingly. Erek made a grunting noise. Julian was digging the knife into his neck. There was a slight tremble to Julian's hand, his grip on the blade. Mark imagined it must be a physical strain to keep Erek contained, but he suspected there was more to it than that. Julian did not have a torturer's nature, for all that he could and would be ruthless in protecting those he loved. "I will kill you if you don't take us in the right direction," he said now. "I will do it slowly."
"You promised my father—"
"I am not a fairy," said Julian. "I can lie." Erek looked darkly furious in a way that alarmed Mark. Fairies could hold grudges for a very long time. He began to walk, though, and the others followed him, leaving behind the orange light glowing from the clearing. They headed into the dark fastness of the forest. The trees grew closer, and there were thick roots snaking up from the dark soil. Clusters of flowers in deep colors, blood reds and poison greens, clustered around the low boughs of the trees. They passed a giggling tree fairy who sat in the fork of a branch, naked except for an elaborate net of silvery wires, and winked at Mark as he went by. Kieran was leaning heavily against his shoulder. Mark kept a hand splayed in the small of Kieran's back. Were the others puzzled or wondering what was going on between them? He saw Christina glance back toward him, but couldn't read her expression. Emma and Christina walked close together. Julian was in front, letting Erek guide them. Mark still felt uneasiness. It seemed as if they had gotten away too easily. for the king of the Unseelie Court to have let them go, and to have them take his favorite son.
Where are the others?
Erek asked as the trees thinned out and the sky, multicolored in all its glory, became visible.
Your friends.
Friends? Mark said in a puzzled tone.
The archers, said Erek. Those flaming arrows in the court. Clever, I'll grant you. We wondered how you would cope with weapons once we took your angel powers away.
How did you do that? Mark asked. Did you unhallow all this land? That wouldn't make a difference, said Emma. Runes work even in demon realms. This is something stranger. And the blight, said Mark. What is the meaning of the blighted land? It is everywhere in the Unseelie lands, like cancer in a sick body.
As if I would speak of it, snapped Erek. And it is no use threatening me. It would be worth my life to tell you.
Believe me, I am tired of threatening you myself, said Julian.
Then let me go, said Erek. How long do you plan to keep me, forever? For that is how long you'd have to use me for protection to keep my father and his knights from finding you and cutting your throats.
I said I was tired of threatening you, not that I was going to stop doing it, said Jules, tapping the knife blade. They'd come to the edge of the forest where the trees ended and fields began. Now, which way? Erek set off into the field, and they followed. Kieran was leaning more heavily on Mark. His face was very pale in the moonlight. The stars picked out the blue and green in his hair. His mother had been an ocean fairy, and a little of the shimmering loveliness of water remained in the colors of Kieran's hair and eyes. Mark's arm curved around him unconsciously. He was angry at Kieran, yes, but here in Fairy, under the brilliant polychromatic stars, it was hard not to remember the past, not to think of all the times he'd clung to Kieran for warmth and companionship. How it had just been them, and he thought perhaps it always would be. How he'd thought himself lucky that someone like Kieran, a prince and beautiful, would ever look at him. Kieran's whisper was a light caress against Mark's neck.
Windspear.
Windspear was Kieran's horse, or had been. He had come with him from the court when Kieran had joined the hunt.
What about him? Where is he?
With the hunt, said Kieran, and coughed hard.
He was a gift from the Dayan when I was very young.
Mark had never before met Kieran's half-brothers, the dozens of princes by different mothers who vied for the Unseelie throne. A Dayan, he knew from Kieran's tales, was one of the kinder ones. Erek was the opposite. He had been brutal to Kieran for most of his life. Kieran rarely spoke of him without anger.
I thought I heard his hoofbeats, Kieran said. I hear them still.
Mark listened. At first he heard nothing. His hearing was not as sharp as Kieran's, or any true fairy's. At least not when his runes weren't working. He had to strain his ears to finally hear the sound. It was hoofbeats, but not windspears. Not any one horse's. This was a thunder of hoofbeats, dozens of them, coming from the forest.
Julian, he cried.
There was no keeping the panic from his voice. Jules heard it and turned, fast, his grip on Erek loosening. Erek tore away, exploding into motion. He streaked across the field, his black cloak flying behind him, and plunged into the forest.
And he was such awesome company, too, Emma muttered.
All that Nephilim you will die in a welter of your own blood stuff was really refreshing. She paused. She had heard the horses.
What's that?
Cortana seemed to fly into her hand. Julian was still holding his dagger. Christina had reached for her balisong.
The king's cavalry, said Kieran with surprising calm. You cannot fight them.
We must run, Mark said. Now. No one argued. They ran. They tore through the field, leapt a stone wall on the far side, Mark half-carrying Kieran over. The ground had begun to tremble by then with a force of distant hoofbeats. Julian was swearing a low, steady stream of curses. Mark guessed he didn't get to swear all that much back at the Institute. They were moving fast, but not fast enough. Unless they could find more woods, some kind of cover. but nothing was visible in the distance, and looking up at the stars told Mark little. He was exhausted enough that they dizzied him. Half his strength felt as if it were going to Kieran, not just dragging him along, but willing him upright. They reached another wall, not high enough to stop fairy horses, but high enough to be annoying. Emma leapt it. Julian sprang after her, his fingers lightly brushing the top of the wall as he sailed over. Kieran shook his head.
"I cannot do it," he said.
"Kier," Mark began angrily, but Kieran had his head down like a beaten dog. His hair fell, sweat-tangled, into his face, and his shirt and the waist of his breeches were soaked in blood.
"You're bleeding again. I thought you said you were healing."
"I thought I was," Kieran said softly. "Mark, leave me here."
A hand touched Mark's shoulder. Christina. She had put her knife away. She looked at him levelly.
"I'll help you get him over the wall."
"Thanks," Mark said. Kieran didn't seem to even have the energy to look at her angrily. She scrambled to the wall's top and reached her hands down. Together, she and Mark hauled Kieran up over the barrier. They jumped down into the grass beside Emma and Julian, who were waiting, looking worried. Kieran landed beside them and collapsed to the ground.
"He can't keep running," said Mark.
Julian glanced over the wall. The hoofbeats were loud now, like thunder overhead. The leading edge of the Unseelie cavalry was in view, a dark and moving line.
"He has to," he said. "They'll kill us."
"Leave me here," said Kieran. "Let him kill me."
Julian dropped to one knee. He put a hand under Kieran's chin, forcing the prince's face up so their eyes met. "You called me ruthless," he said, his fingers pale against Kieran's bloodied skin. "I have no pity for you, Kieran. You brought this on yourself. But if you think we came all the way here to save your life just to let you lie down and die, you're more foolish than I thought." His hand fell from Kieran's face to his arm, hauling him upright. "Help me, Mark." Together they lifted Kieran between them and started forward. It was a blindingly hard task. Panic and the strain of holding up Kieran threw off Mark's hunting senses. They stumbled over rocks and roots, plunged into a thick copse of trees, its branches reaching down to tear their skin and gear. Halfway through the copse, Kieran went limp. He had finally fainted.
"If he dies," Mark began.
"He won't die," Julian said grimly. "We could hide him here, come back to get him."
"He's not a pair of shoes. We can't just leave him somewhere and expect him to be there when we get back," Julian hissed.
"Would you two stop?" Emma began and then broke off with a gasp.
"Oh."
They had burst out of the small patch of trees. In front of them rose a hill, green and smooth. They could climb it, but it would demand digging in with hands and feet, scrambling over the top. It would be impossible to do and keep Kieran with them. Even Julian stopped dead. Kieran's arm had been looped around Julian's neck. Now it swung free, dangling at his side. Mark had the distant, horrible feeling he was already dead. He wanted to lay Kieran down in the grass, check for his heartbeat, hold him as a hunter should be held in his last moments. Instead, he turned his head and looked behind them. Christina had her eyes closed. She was holding her pendant, her mouth moving in silent prayer. Emma held Cortana the same way, her eyes watchful and glittering. She would defend them to the last, Kieran too. She would go down under the hooves of the dark cavalry. And they were coming. Mark could see them, shadows between the trees. Horses like black smoke, blazing eyes like red coals, shot in silver and burning gold. Fire and blood gave them life. They were murderous and brutal. Mark thought he could see the king riding at their head. His battle helmet was etched with a pattern of screaming faces. Its faceplate covered only that half of the king's face that was human and beautiful, leaving the dead gray skin exposed. His single eye burned like red poison. The sound of their coming was like the sound of a glacier breaking apart, deafening, deadly. Mark wished suddenly that he could hear what Christina was saying, the words of her quiet prayer. He watched her lips move.
"Angel, provide for us. Bless us. Save us."
"Mark,"
Julian turned his head toward his brother, his blue-green eyes suddenly unguarded, as if he were about to say something he had been desperate to say for a long time.
If you...
The hill seemed to crack apart. A large square in the front of it peeled away from the rest and swung open like a door. Mark's mouth fell open. He had heard of such things, hills with doors in the sides, but he had never seen one. Light glowed from the opening. It seemed to be a corridor winding into the heart of the hill. A young fairy woman with gently pointed ears, her pale hair bound back with ropes of flowers, stood in the entryway holding a lamp. She reached out a hand toward them.
Come,
she said, and her voice had the undeniable accent of the Seelie court.
Come, quickly, before they reach you. For the king's rider's a savage, and they will not leave you alive.
And you, Julian said, do you mean us well? Only Julian would argue with Providence, Mark thought. But then Julian trusted no one but his family, and sometimes not even them. The woman smiled.
I am Neen, she said. I will aid you and not harm you, but come now, quickly.
Mark heard Christina whisper a thank you. Then they were all racing again, not daring to look behind them. One by one they leapt through the door and onto the packed earth inside. Mark and Julian came last, carrying Kieran. Mark caught one glimpse of the dark riders behind them and heard their screams of disappointed rage. Then the door slammed shut behind them, sealing up the hill. Chapter 13 Dreamland. Emma looked around in wonder. The entranceway bore no traces of having been carved out of a hillside. It was made of smooth, ash-colored stone, the roof of blue marble pattern with gilded stars. A shadowed corridor led deeper into the hill. The fairy woman, Neen, raised her lamp. It was filled with darting fireflies that cast a limited glow over their small group. Emma saw Julian with his mouth set in a hard line, Christina holding her pendant tightly. Mark was lowering Kieran to the ground, his hands gentle. It took her a moment to realize Kieran was unconscious, his head lolling back, clothes dappled in blood.
We are in Seelie lands now, said Neen. You can use your runes and witch lights.
Her gaze on Kieran was troubled.
You can heal your friend.
We can't, Julian flipped his witch light out of his pocket. Its illumination rushed over Emma like a relief of water in the desert. He's not a shadow hunter.
Neen drifted closer, her pale eyebrows arched in consternation.
Mark was on the ground, holding Kieran, whose face was drained icy white, his closed eyes pale crescents in his blanched face.
Is he a hunter? She asked.
We both, began Mark.
Is there anything you can do for him? Emma interrupted before Mark said too much.
Yes. Neen knelt down, setting her lamp on the floor beside her. She took a vial from the inside of the sleeveless white fur jacket she wore over her dress. She hesitated, looking at Mark.
You do not need this. You are not injured.
He shook his head, puzzled.
No. Why? I brought it for you.
She uncorked it, setting it to Kieran's lips. She crooned something under her breath in a language unfamiliar to Emma. Kieran's lips parted and he swallowed. Pale gold liquid ran from the corners of his mouth. His eyes fluttered open and he pulled himself upright, swallowing a second mouthful and a third. His eyes met Neen's over the rim of the bottle, and he turned his face away, wiping his mouth with his sleeve.
Save the rest, he said hoarsely. It's enough.
He staggered to his feet, Mark helping him. The others had put away their steelies. A new healing rune burned on Emma's arm, an energy rune beside it. Still her body ached and her heart hurt. She kept seeing her father, over and over, looking up at her from the grass. It hadn't been him, not really, but that didn't make the image less painful.
Come, said Neen, putting the vial away. The drink will only sustain him for a short time. We must hurry to the court.
She started down the corridor, and the others followed, Mark supporting the staggering Kieran.
Julian had his witchlight stone out, and the hall was bright. The walls looked like intricate mosaic from a distance, but up close, Emma could see they were clear resin, behind which the petals of flowers and wings of butterflies were pressed flat. "My lady," said Christina. Her hair, like Emma's, was tangled with leaves and burrs. "What did you mean you brought that drink for Mark? How did you know he would come here?" "We had guests here in the court," said Neen, "a shadow hunter girl with red hair and a blonde boy." "Chase Herondale and Clary Fairchild?" guessed Emma. "They told me of the Blackthorns. That was a name I knew. My sister, Nerissa, loved a Blackthorn man, and had two of his children, and died of her love for him when he left her." Mark stopped in his tracks. Kieran gave a slight hiss of pain. "You're my mother's sister?" he said incredulously. "I think they usually call that your aunt," said Emma. Mark gave her a dark look. "I am the one who carried you and your sister to your father's doorstep and left you there for him to raise," said Neen. "You are my blood."
"I am beginning to wonder if any of you do not have a long-lost relative in Faerie," said Kieran.
"I don't," said Christina, sounding regretful. "Half Mark's relatives are fairies," pointed out Emma. "Where else would they be?" "How did you know I would need saving?" said Mark to the fairy woman. "The Pooka, who let you through the moon gate, is an old friend," Neen said. "He told me of your journey, and I guessed your mission. I knew you would not survive the Lord of Shadows' tricks without aid." "The burning arrows," Julian said. The corridor had now turned from stone and tile to packed earth. Roots dangled from the ceiling, each one twined with glimmering flowers that lit the darkness. Veins of minerals in the rocks shimmered and changed as Emma looked at them. "That was you?" Neen nodded. "And a few others of the Queen's Guard. Then I had only to stay a few steps ahead of you and open this door. It was not simple. There are many doors to Seelie. All over the king's lands. More than he knows." She cast a sharp look at Kieran. "You will not speak of this, will you, Hunter?"
"I thought you imagined me Nephilim," said Kieran.
"That was before I saw your eyes," she said. "Like my nephew. You are a servant of Gwyn." She sighed softly. "If my sister Nerissa had known her son would grow to be so cursed, it would have broken her heart." Julian's face darkened, but before he could speak, a figure loomed up in front of them. They had reached a place where the corridor opened into a circular room, with other hallways leading off it in a dizzying array of directions. Blocking their forward progress was a fairy knight, a tall, wheat-skinned man with a somber expression. He wore robes and a doublet of brilliant, multicolored fabric.
"Fergus," said Neen. "Let us go by."
He arched a dark brow and replied with a torrent of words in an odd, bird-like language, not angry, but clearly annoyed. Neen held up her hand, her voice sharp in response. As Emma watched her, she thought she could detect some resemblance to Mark. Not just the pale blonde hair, but the delicacy of her bones, the deliberateness of her gestures. The knight sighed and stepped aside.
"We can go now, but we will be called to an audience with the Queen at first light," said Neen, hurrying forward.
"Come, help me get the hunter to a room." Emma had quite a few questions. How could they tell it was first light down here? Why Neen seemed to dislike the wild hunt so much, and, of course, where they were going? She kept them to herself, though, and eventually they reached the end of a corridor where the walls were polished rock, gleaming with semi-precious stones. Tiger's eye, azurite, jasper. Gaps in the rock were covered with long velvet hangings, embroidered with glimmering thread. Neen swept one of the hangings aside, revealing a room whose walls were smooth and curved in toward a domed ceiling. White hangings drifted down, half covering a bed made of thick branches wound with flowers. Neen set down her lamp.
"Lay the hunter down," she said.
Kieran had gone silent since they'd entered the Seelie court proper. He let Mark lead him over to the bed. He looked pretty awful, Emma thought, as Mark helped Kieran settle into the mattress. She wondered how many times Mark had done this sort of thing for Kieran, when Kieran was exhausted after a hunt, or how many times Kieran had done it for Mark. Being a hunter was a risky job. She couldn't imagine how much of each other's blood they'd seen. "Is there a healer in this court?" Mark asked, straightening up. "I am the healer," said Neen, "though I rarely work alone. Usually I am assisted, but the hour is late and the court is half empty." Her gaze fell on Christina. "You will help me."
"Me?" Christina looked startled.
"You have a healing air about you," said Neen, bustling up to a wooden cabinet and throwing the doors open. In it were jars of herbs, dangling strings of dried flowers, and vials of different colored liquids. "Can you name any of these?"
"Fawn flower," said Christina promptly, as if they were in class. "Miner's lettuce, false lily, queen's cup."
Neen looked impressed. She pulled a stack of linens, including strips cut neatly into bandage size, from a drawer and handed them to Christina.
"Too many people in the room will slow a patient's healing. I will take these two next door. You must remove Kieran's clothes."
Christina's cheeks flamed.
"Mark can do that."
Neen rolled her eyes.
"As you like."
She turned toward the bed where Kieran was collapsed back against the pillows. There were rusty smears of blood all over Mark's shirt and skin, but he didn't seem to notice.
"Crush some foam flour. Give it to him with water. Do not bandage him yet. We must inspect the wound."
She hurried from the room, and Emma and Julian dashed after her. They went only a few steps down the corridor, to where a dark red curtain hid an open door. Neen pushed it aside and gestured the two of them to come in. Once inside, Emma had to suppress a gasp. This room was much grander than the other. The roof was lost in shadows. The walls were silvery quartz and glowed from within, lighting the room with a soft radiance. Creamy white and ivory flowers cascaded down the walls, perfuming the air with a scent of a garden. A massive bed stood on a platform, steps leading up to it. It was piled with velvet cushions and a rich coverlet.
"Will this do?" Neen asked.
Emma could only nod. A hedge, atop which grew a lattice of roses, stretched across one end of the room, and behind it a cascade of water rushing down the rocks. When she glanced around the hedge, she saw that it emptied into a rock pool lined with green and blue stones that formed the shape of a butterfly.
"Not as fancy as the Institute," she heard Julian say, "but it'll do."
"Whose room is this?" Emma asked. "Is it the Queen's?"
Neen laughed.
"The Queen's chambers? Certainly not. This is Fergus's. Actually, he has two. He is much favored in the court. He won't mind if you sleep here. He has night watch."
She turned to walk away, but stopped at the curtain and glanced back at them.
"You are my nephew's brother and sister?"
Emma opened her mouth, then closed it again. Mark was more of a brother to her than anything else. Certainly more of a brother than Julian. "Yes," Julian said, sensing her hesitation.
"And you love him," said Neen.
"I think you will find, if you take the time to get to know him, that he is easy to love," said Jules. And Emma's heart expanded, yearning for him and Mark together, happy and laughing as brothers should be, and for the challenge in Julian's eyes when he looked at Neen. "You owe my brother the love he deserves. Show it, or I turn my back on you."
Neen cleared her throat. "And my niece, Alessa?"
"Her name is Helen now," said Julian. He paused for a moment, and Emma could see him weighing the mention of Helen's situation and dismissing it. He did not trust Neen enough, not yet. "Yes, she is my sister. Yes, I love her as I love Mark. They are both easy to love."
"Easy to love," echoed Neen in a musing voice. "There are few of our people I would ever have said were easy to love."
She ducked back through the door. "I must hurry back before the hunter boy expires," she said, and was gone. Julian looked at Emma with arched eyebrows. "She's very..." "Yes," agreed Emma, not needing the rest of the words to know what he meant. She and Julian almost always agreed on people. She felt her mouth curve up as she smiled at him, despite everything, despite the incredible, impossible strain of the night. And it wasn't as if the risk was over, she thought, turning to gaze at the room. She had hardly ever been in such a beautiful space. She had even heard of cave hotels, places in Cappadocia and Greece where gorgeous rooms were dug out of rocks and draped with silks and velvets. But it was the flowers here that tugged at her heart, those white flowers that smelled like cream and sugar, like the white flowers that grew in Idris. They seemed to radiate light. And then there was the bed. With a sort of belated shock, she realized that she and Julian had been left alone together in a wildly romantic room with only one very large, very plush bed. Definitely, the night's worries were not over at all. When Neen returned, she cleaned Kieran's wound gently with damp linens, pressing the edges of the cut carefully with her fingers. He sat upright and rigid on the edge of the bed, not moving or acknowledging what was going on, but Christina could see from the deep crescent marking his lower lip that he was in pain. Mark sat quietly beside him. He seemed wrung out, exhausted, and did not move to hold Kieran's hand, only sat with his shoulder touching the other boy's. But then, they had never been the hand-holding type, Christina thought. The Wild Hunt was not a place where such gentle expressions of affection were welcome. "There was monkshood on the Unsealiero," Neen said when she was done cleaning the wound. She held her hand out for a bandage and began wrapping Kieran's slender torso. He had been undressed and redressed in clean trousers, a shirt folded on the bed next to him. There were scars on Kieran's back, not unlike the ones on Mark's, and they stretched to the tops of his arms and down his forearms, too. He was thin but strong-looking, with clear lines of muscles in his arms and across his chest. "If you were human, or even ordinary fey, it would have killed you. But hunters have their own protection. You will live." "Yes," Kieran said with an arrogant tilt to his chin. But Christina wondered. He didn't say, "Yes, I knew I would live." He had doubted, she suspected. He had feared he would die. She rather admired his bravery. She couldn't help it. Neen rolled her eyes, finishing with the bandages. She tapped Christina's shoulder as Kieran shrugged his shirt on, doing the buttons up with slow, shaking fingers, and indicated a shallow marble dish on the nightstand, filled with damp cloths swimming in a greenish liquid. "Those are poultices to prevent infection. Put a new one on the wound every 2 hours." Christina nodded. She wasn't sure how she would set an alarm or wake up every 2 hours, or if she was simply meant to stay awake through the night, but she would manage either way. "Here," Neen said, leaning down to Kieran with another vial. "Drink this. It will not harm you, only help you." After a moment, Kieran drank. Suddenly he pushed the vial away, coughing. "How dare you?" he began, and then his eyes rolled back and he sank down to the pillows. Mark caught him before his wounded back could touch the bed, and helped Neen carefully roll him onto his side. "Don't feel bad," Mark said, noticing Neen's set jaw. "He always falls asleep yelling that." "He needed to rest," was all Neen said. She swept from the room. Mark watched her go, his face troubled. "She is not what I imagined when I dreamed that I might have family in Faerie," he said. "For so many years I looked and asked, but there was no sign of them. I'd given up." "She went out of her way to find you and save you," said Christina. "She clearly cares for you." "She doesn't know me," said Mark. "Fairies feel very strongly about blood. She could not leave me to fall into the hands of the Unseelie King.
What happens to one member of a family reflects upon the others of that bloodline.
She touched your hair, Christina wanted to say. She had seen it, only very quickly.
As Neen had reached to bandage Kieran's back, her fingers had brushed the fine edges of Mark's pale hair. He hadn't noticed, and Christina wondered now if she told him, if he would even believe her.
Christina sat on the foot of the bed. Kieran had curled up, his dark hair tangled beneath his restless head. Mark was leaning back against the headboard. His bare feet were on the bed, only a few inches from Christina. His arm lay outstretched, his fingers nearly touching hers. But his gaze was on Kieran.
"He doesn't remember," he said.
"Kieran? What doesn't he remember?" Mark pulled his knees up to his chest. In his torn and bloody shirt and trousers, he looked more like the ragged figure he'd been when the wild hunt had let him go.
"The Unseelie Court beat him and tortured him," he said. "I expected it. It's what they do to their prisoners. After I untied him, as soon as I got him out of the clearing, I realized they'd done him some kind of damage that meant he didn't remember killing Irloth. He doesn't remember anything since that night he saw us talking in the kitchen.
He doesn't remember the whipping? What happened with Jules and Emma?
He doesn't remember it happening, or that I left him over it," Mark said grimly. "He said he knew I would come for him, as if we were still what we were."
"What were you?" Christina realized she'd never asked. "Did you exchange promises? Did you have a word for it, like novio?"
"Boyfriend?" Mark echoed. "No, nothing like that. But it was something. And then it was nothing. Because I was angry."
He looked at Christina wretchedly.
"But how can I be angry at someone who doesn't even remember what he did?"
"Your feelings are your feelings. Kieran did do those things. He did them, even if he does not remember them," Christina frowned.
"Do I sound harsh? I don't mean to. But I sat with Emma after. I helped bandage her whip cuts."
"Now you've helped bandage Kieran." Mark took a deep breath.
"I'm sorry, Christina. This must seem... I can't even imagine what you're thinking, having to sit here with me, with him."
"You mean because of..."
Christina blushed. "Because of the way we kissed at the revel?" She searched inside her heart, looking for jealousy, for bitterness, for anger at Mark. There was nothing, not even the fury she'd felt at Diego at the appearance of Zara. How far away that seemed now. How distant, how unimportant. Zara was welcome to Diego. She could have him.
"I'm not angry," she said. "And you shouldn't be worrying about what I'm feeling anyway. We should be concentrating on the fact that Kieran is safe, that we can return."
"I can't stop worrying about what you're feeling," Mark said. "I can't stop thinking about you at all."
Christina felt her heart thump.
"It would be a mistake to think of the Seelie Court as a safe ground where we can rest. There is an old saying that the only difference between Seelie and Unseelie is that the Unseelie do evil in the open, and the Seelie hide it."
Mark glanced down. Kieran was breathing softly, evenly.
"And I don't know what we will do with Kieran," he said. "Send him back to the hunt? Call for Quinn? Kieran will not understand why I would want to be parted from him now."
"Do you want to be parted from him now?"
Mark said nothing.
"I understand," she said. "I do.
You have always needed Kieran so badly. You never had the chance to think about what you wanted with him before."
Mark made a short noise under his breath. He took her hand and held it, still looking at Kieran. His grip was tight, but she didn't pull away.
Julian sat on Fergus's massive bed. He could see nothing of Emma behind the high hedge that blocked the rock pool, but he could hear her splashing, a sound that echoed off the shining walls. The sound made his nerves crank tighter. When she was done with the pool, she'd come out, and she'd get in bed with him. He'd shared beds with Emma,
100 times, maybe 1,000. But it had meant nothing when they were children. And later, when they weren't, he had told himself it still meant nothing, even when he was waking up in the middle of the night to watch the way strands of her hair tickled her cheek while she slept. Even when she started to leave early in the morning to run on the beach, and he'd curl up in the warmth she left against the sheets and inhale the rosewater scent of her skin. Breathe. He dug his hands into the velvet pillow he pulled onto his lap. Think about something else. It wasn't as if he didn't have plenty of other things to think about. Here they were in the Seely court, not quite prisoners and not quite guests. Ferry was just as hard to escape as it was to enter, and yet they had no plan for how to leave. But he was exhausted. This was the first time he'd been alone in a bedroom with Emma since she'd ended things, and for this rare instant his heart was doing the thinking, not his brain. "Jules?" she called. He remembered the brief days when she had called him Julian, the way the sound of the word in her mouth had made his heart shatter with pleasure. "Neen left me a dress, and it's..." she sighed. "Well, I guess you'd better see." She came out from behind the hedge that hid the pool, her hair down, wearing the dress. Fairy clothes were usually either very ornate or very simple. This dress was simple. Thin straps crisscrossed her shoulders. It was made of a silky white material that clung to her wet body like a second skin, outlining the curves of her waist and hips. Julian felt his mouth go dry. Why had Neen left her a dress? Why couldn't Emma be coming to bed in filthy gear? Why did the universe hate him? "It's white," she said, frowning. For death and mourning, the color's white. White was funerals for Shadowhunters. There was white gear for state funerals, and white silk was placed over the eyes of dead Shadowhunters when their bodies were burned. "White doesn't mean anything to fairies," he said. "To them, it's the color of flowers and natural things." "I know, it's just..." She sighed and began to pad barefoot up the stairs to the dais where the bed was centered. She stopped to examine the enormous mattress, shaking her head in wonderment. "Okay, maybe I didn't immediately warm to Fergus when we met," she said. Her face was glowing from the heat of the water, her cheeks pink. "But he would run an awesome bed and breakfast, you have to admit. He'd probably slip a mint tenderly under your pillow every night." The gown fell away slightly as she climbed onto the bed, and Julian realized to his horror that it was slid up the side almost to her hip. Her long legs flashed against the material as she settled herself on the bedspread. The universe didn't just hate him. It was trying to kill him. "Give me some more pillows," she demanded, and snatched several of them from beside Julian before he could move. He kept firm hold of the one on his lap and looked at Emma levelly. "No stealing covers," he said. "I would never..." She pushed the pillows behind her, making a pile she could lean against. Her damp hair adhered to her neck and shoulders, long locks of pale wet gold. Her eyes were red-rimmed, as if she'd been crying. Emma rarely cried. He realized her chatter since she'd come into the bedroom was false cheer, something he ought to have known, he who knew Emma better than anyone. "Em," he said, unable to help himself or the gentleness in his voice, "are you all right? What happened at the Unseelie Court?" "I just feel so stupid," she said, the bravado draining from her voice. Under the artifice was Emma. His Emma, with all her force and intelligence and bravery, Emma, sounding shattered. "I know fairies play tricks. I know they lie without lying. And yet the Pooka said to me. He said if I came into fairy, I would see the face of someone I loved and lost."
"Very fair folk," said Julian. "You saw his face, your father's face. But it wasn't him. It was an illusion.
It was like I couldn't process it," she said. "My whole mind was clouded. All I could think was that I had my father back.
Your mind probably was clouded, said Julian. There are all sorts of subtle enchantments that can blur your thoughts here, and it happens so quickly. I didn't suspect it was an illusion either. I've never heard of one so strong.